Welcome to Who's Your Team, the podcast where we ask celebrities about their favourite football team. It's as simple as that. I'm Jim Daly. Joining me is the York to my Cole, the Rivaldo to my Ronaldo, the Sean Dyche to that terrible jacket that he wears all the time. It's Dave Bibby. Hello, Dave.
Oh, yes. So am I the jacket or am I Dyche? Because I'll have to change my voice if I'm Dyche.
You be Dyche, I'll be the jacket.
Great. Let's do this. Come on. Let's get it in there. We've got enough players.
Did you see before the game before Christmas? I think it was the Spurs game that got called off, and it was unbelievably bad snow coming down.
Yeah.
And he went out without his jacket on, just a shirt. Big smile on his face, just to show off. Look, I'm from the north. I don't do jackets in the snow.
He knows what he's doing. They're all out there like, you can't possibly send professional football players out in this, and he's there in his shirt going, I can play.
Exactly. If I can be out here, so can they.
Yeah, great stuff. And I think that's why the Premier League is the best league in the world, trademark sign. Because you've got these people like Pep Guardiola, who's got this sort of theory of playing football. And then you've got Burnley away in the snow. And it is, you know.
Well, you've got Pep Guardiola with his array of jackets, designer jackets and designer tops with MCR on the back. And then you've got Sean Dyche with his one Burton's jacket that he wears to every single game, apart from when it's snowing ridiculously.
Yeah. They look like they're not even from the same industry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, great. Okay, cool. So I'm Sean Dyche, and this is a new podcast.
And I'll be the jacket. Well, listen, this is the first episode of our brand new podcast. It's an interview podcast. We interview celebrities about their favourite football team. This week's guest, who we'll get onto later, is the one and only radio legend Toby Tarrant, who is... Do we spoil it? I mean, it's literally in the title of the podcast. Do we spoil it? He's a Liverpool fan.
He is a Liverpool fan. He's a big red. He's physically tall, and he's also a fan that goes to games and fell in love with the game and the Reds. I won't tell you why, because that's basically the point of the podcast. It's Route One stuff. Who do you support? Why do you support them? Do you like the kits? Yeah. Okay, great.
That's it, yeah.
So if anyone's like training for a marathon or got a long journey, this is easy listening.
It's very easy listening. We should probably point out that this interview with Toby is a year old. Actually, I think it's over a year old. I think it's back to 2020. Those innocent days. And that's why some of the subject matter in it might sound a bit dated. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comes up a few times. But the nature of the interview in general is pretty non-time sensitive. And in fact, all these interviews we've done are about a year old. We did them all a year ago, sat on them, and now we're releasing them. So just in case anything jars like that, that is why. We should say as well, probably set our stall out. And again, this is literally in the artwork of the podcast. You are a Liverpool fan.
I am.
I am a Crystal Palace fan.
Unfortunately.
It comes up a lot on this episode.
Yeah.
It comes up a lot in every episode. Essentially, we are recording this mere days after Liverpool 3-1 win at Selhurst Park.
The Battle of Crystal Palace.
The Battle of South London. Great performance from Liverpool. Captained, of course, by Kevin Friend. Fantastic performance from the man in red.
You guys need to move the times. Either you start paying referees or you move out and let us go away and play in Europe. In a Super League somewhere. My only defence of Kevin Friend was that he did get it right. It was the guy in the VAR that said, you've got it wrong.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm pretty sure I've got it right. Let me check. Oh, yeah, I'm not allowed to make a decision now. I have to go with the wrong decision despite me getting it right. And then I have to tell everyone I got it wrong despite me thinking I got it right. Penalty.
Yeah.
Are you still with me?
there was the slight caveat. Obviously, Palace fans, we're very angry about this, as we should be. Great second half from us.
Yeah.
There's a slight caveat.
Game of two halves.
It was 2-1 when the penalty went in. We were still losing.
It's the 88th
and probably
minute.
Wouldn't have equalised.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was a ridiculous decision. How do you feel as a Liverpool fan? Does it make you feel guilty or embarrassed?
No, because there's a lot of that every club thinks, oh God, we don't get those decisions because X or Y. And you know, Liverpool fans feel the same. It's like, well, Alisson, you know, we played Burnley last year and he booted the ball into the stand, empty stands, and then just sort of ran into Alisson. They were like, penalty. And, you know, a few weeks ago, Jota at Tottenham got taken out. Harry Kane didn't get sent off and Robertson did.
Yeah.
You know, so you basically just say, the standard of officiating. I'm sorry if you're listening to this, ref, because I'm sure there's some great refs out there. But the standard of officiating has gone down because they're asking themselves too many questions and looking back at the wrong things. And at the end of the day, I don't think that was a penalty, but I don't care that much.
I love the fact that you think with our very first episode of this podcast from two non-famous comedians that Craig Pawson is going to be listening in.
Well, I did a gig for PG, MOL and all the referees. So there's potential that they would come in here and listen to this. And episode one, straight away, oh, okay, so he didn't like us.
Were any of the big names there?
No, not really. Although I'm very old school in that I don't want to know the referee's name, and I think stop telling us their names because they should be unnoticed. They should just be like this system of governing football matches. They're not celebrities. They're not stars. No little kids like, oh, I want the Craig Pawson shirt for Christmas. Don't tell me their names. They just wear black and they blow a whistle. So stop. I don't want to know where they're from and who they saw. Oh, he actually was a season ticket holder. Don't care.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want any more Mike Deans.
It's not like you're opening your Panini sticker and going, I've got a shiny Pawson. I can't believe it. That's the one I wanted.
Oh, God. No one's going to swap a shiny Pawson.
No, you're not going to know. What you're saying is you want to go to a system where they are essentially prisoners with a prisoner number.
Yeah.
And that's all you know about them.
Yeah, exactly. And lock maybe them up. After the game, lock them up.
Do they wear a mask, maybe, so you can't even see their face?
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
Too much emotion.
I think
human
if
emotion.
We can get a cyborg doing it,
yeah,
that would be my... If we can get a C-3PO,
yeah,
then we're in.
You think you want to move towards robot referees?
Yeah, and I think... your man... what's his name who runs Tesla?
Elon Musk.
Yeah, he's not replying to my emails about the referees. But I think he's got the potential to do it. I mean, I know that everything he makes is absolutely rubbish, but you have to remember that the current situation is rubbish.
Exactly, yeah.
So we might as well make him electric.
So the slight problem with going to sort of robot refs is where do you go then? Do you end up with robot players and potentially then robot football podcast hosts? Which
No, I don't think.
So is that your Deitch?
Okay. That's very similar. The subtle differences. No, we've already got robot players. We've got Man City, haven't we? There's no sort of passion or change in tactics.
Should we say as well with this podcast, we'll go on to Toby in a minute, with this podcast, yes, we are Liverpool and Palace fans, and we're going to get fans coming on of various clubs. Obviously, it's not just Liverpool and Palace. We are not going to be hiding our allegiances. There's going to be a lot of Man City jokes, basically, is what I'm
trying
to say.
Yeah, exactly. But I think I don't trust anyone that isn't biased towards their team. Like, because I don't know that I'm doing it, but I'm aware that I must be. Do you know what I mean? Because why wouldn't you be?
Yeah.
You know? So if someone says they're completely neutral, then they're just an idiot, you know, or they're one of those, you know, water cooler fans that actually don't know what they're talking about.
Which is the beauty of this podcast, because everyone that's coming on is a diehard of their club.
Yeah, you'll get found out on this one.
100%. Yeah. No watered down football opinions here. Shall we crack on then with our first episode?
Yeah, bring
him
in.
Do you want to say how we know Toby? Because obviously we have a sort of pre-existing relationship with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think we do that anyway on the...
Yeah, we do, yeah.
But yeah, we've known Toby since the balmy summer of 2018, you know, pre-COVID, pre-Boris, maybe. England was suddenly
is that the new
good
way,
again.
Sorry, is that the new way that we're sort of like quantifying? It's like BC.
Yeah.
It's now BB.
Like a couple of lads that survived Pompeii.
Yeah.
Just like, you know, things are great. I mean, obviously not great like everything covered in ash and snot. But yeah, so we've known him since that. It was just a great summer.
Yeah.
2018, England was suddenly all right at football. Southgate got a waistcoat out.
We had regular work. It was a great summer.
Yeah, and we did a football show where we got to interview loads of people that we liked.
Yeah.
And now we're doing it in podcast form.
Indeed. So here is presenting, radio... Has he gone into TV? He'll go into TV at some point. Actually, he was on House of Games, so I guess that...
Let's talk him down a little bit, actually. He's a great radio legend, but he's got a lot of work to do on the TV. It's Toby Tarrant.
We are joined for this episode by a man who has a passion for football, a passion for live music, a passion for cricket, and he's Radio X's legend of mid-mornings. Dave, that about covers it, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's the Aldi Peter Crouch.
It's the one and only Toby Tarrant. Toby, how you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. You know, that is genuinely one of the nicest things anyone's ever called me, so I'll take that. If the worst tweet I received to my show every day was, "You're the Aldi Peter Crouch," I'd go home delighted.
Social media's great, isn't it? What an invention.
Where would we be without social media, eh? Well, it's lovely to see you both. I mean, I feel like we should explain how us three first met one another.
Yeah.
I'm sure, obviously, everybody listening to the podcast, obviously you saw the show. It was huge.
Of course.
Yeah, the Yahoo Sport, the football show, the three of us, the wonderful Lindsay Hipgrave, and a great behind-the-scenes team as well.
Yeah, what a team.
You're on a team. And I still maintain, if it weren't for something called Netflix, we would have been the biggest thing on the internet.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Netflix and porn really killed us.
And the fact we used to go out when everyone was commuting, that it was broadcast around the time that no one had any time to watch the show.
Monday and Friday mornings, 8:30. You're not busy, are you?
Yeah, moving on.
Weirdly, they told us at one point during the World Cup, because they used to cut up the segments and then send them out later, that Dave and I's videos were like the most popular videos in Italy.
Oh, really?
During the World Cup or something. Yeah.
You can't walk down the streets of Bologna without getting a crowd storming you.
Mob.
But we kept struggling to, like, every time we wrote a sketch or a VT, they'd be like, it's not international enough. And I don't remember what the joke was, but there's one week where the punchline was Ronnie Corbett, and they were like, it's not international enough. And so we changed it to Tom Cruise, and basically just someone else who was international but short. And wasn't funny anymore. They were just like, it won't work in Malaysia. And I was like, yeah, but Ronnie Corbett is funny.
Yes, Dave. The punchline about Tom Cruise was what ruined the sketch. Yeah.
Yeah. Otherwise... I guess Tom Cruise in Malaysia is just a decently heighted man.
Yeah, exactly. Just a general hero.
just a comfortable 5'7".
But yeah, basically, we as a trio, along as you say, with Lindsay and Reshmin and the rest of the guy at Yahoo Sport, we have talked football a lot, and we've had a lot of guests and people before. So we know who your team is, but for the sake of the listeners today, tell us, who is your team?
Well, as you can tell from my thick accent, I was born and raised in Bootle, and I'm a big Liverpool fan. Yeah, no, I am genuinely a Liverpool fan and a Liverpool season ticket holder. Not that counts for much at the moment in lockdown, but it'd be nice.
Do you get anything, like, as a season ticket holder right now? Are you getting any benefits?
No, other than I don't have to pay for it, basically. So I pay for mine monthly, and that's been frozen for a few months, but other than that, no benefits at all. I have been doing some very nice gigs in lockdown, hosting for Standard Chartered virtual pre-match day experiences. So I've got the chance to interview Phil Thompson, Luis Garcia, Jose Enrique. I don't know how he slipped through the net as a legend, but Jason
McAteer. Just good availability and a nice mask. Yeah.
Somebody a great internet connection.
yeah, he's got, you know, so you like about Jose Enrique, but he's got broadband.
connection.
So that's been very nice. So keeping my relationship with the club suite in lockdown. But other than that, no, I've not seen my beloved Anfield in about 7 or 8 months now.
It's been a very weird year, hasn't it? Watching on TV, watching that Project Lockdown, that sort of Netflix-style mini World Cup we had in the summer was, I mean, quite frankly, amazing. And being able to justify watching football every day to my wife was fantastic. That's run out now, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's been a weird year, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, I should take this moment to reflect on the fact that nearly 60,000 people have died, probably more significant than me not being able to go to Anfield. But nonetheless, it has been one thing genuinely that my whole week is based around going to Anfield once or twice a week, and that not being able to do that has been surreal. Spent a lot of time with my girlfriend, and I think she resents me. I think that Liverpool season ticket's the only thing that's kept us going all this time, to be honest.
Hang on, you've got engaged, haven't you?
I've got engaged since I last saw you both, yeah.
Congratulations.
Congrats.
Well, you know, when Anfield wasn't an option, you know, there was nothing else to do.
What else could we do?
but propose, yeah. So that's very exciting. So all grown up, all very grown up.
Well, Listen, let's get the awkwardness out of the way, because obviously being the only person on this current episode who doesn't support two football clubs, I am obviously morally superior to you both. You do have a connection to Reading as well. So where do you class Reading in your supporting list?
Yeah, I'm not a Reading supporter, but I will always have a soft spot for them. So my dad is a Reading season ticket holder. And I never used to be able to get Liverpool tickets at all. They were like, you know, rocking horse shit a few years ago. but been able to get them in recent years. So back, but before I could, a great chance to go and watch live football, me and my old man. And I loved it. We used to go and sit next to each other at the Medeski and go and watch Reading play. Obviously, they had it timed very well that my dad got the season ticket the year that they got promoted. So we had that amazing championship season where they got 106 points. Then the season in the Premier League where they finished eighth under Steve Coppell, that really likeable Reading side of Nicky Shorey and Ibrahima Sonko, Andre Bikey, Graham Murty, Steve Sidwell, Ivar Ingemarsson. What a team. Legend Kevin Doyle factory. And Shane Long. Oh, Marcus Hanneman in goal. So we had that really good year. Then a not so good year. But yeah, me and my dad, I used to go with him and I went to a couple of playoff finals. And so I'll always have a huge soft spot for Reading. So I always keep an eye out for their score on a Saturday. And I have to admit, there was a point where, because I couldn't go to Liverpool games because I couldn't get tickets, there was a point where I could only go to Reading games where I really started to fall in love with Reading. And I started to worry myself. I went, you know, wow. I went, I'm following Reading as much as I'm following Liverpool at the moment. I wonder, you know, if what would happen if they play each other. And then they drew each other in the FA Cup and Reading knocked Liverpool out of the FA Cup.
Oh, yeah.
And the Reading players that I thought I loved, I was calling them every name under the sun. It was like I'd never been to a Reading game in my life. And I was like, oh, it's good to know that, no, very much still definitely a Liverpool fan. I felt bad. I was like dropping C-bombs on Reading players. A week later, I'm sat at home applauding them as they walk out. Going, yeah, good lads.
Sonko is like, Toby, how could you?
Yeah, exactly. Sorry about last week, Sonko. I let my emotions get the better of it.
So that's a great test of your love of Liverpool then. So, yeah, you started to worry and then you're like, no, here we go. I've now got to decide which camp I'm in.
Yeah, and it turned out not even close. I was very much a Liverpool fan. But no, I always look out for Reading score and I like seeing them do well because my dad's happy if they're doing well. So, no, they are, you know, I wouldn't go as far as a second team, but certainly a very big soft spot for Reading.
Well, because supporting a second, obviously, Dave, you're half Luton Town fan. Luton is your second team, local.
I'm the same as you. Well, my dad's Liverpool, all my family from up north, and I'm the youngest of three boys. They were born up north. I was actually born down south. But both of my brothers support Luton Town. I think just being a tad older, Luton were a bit better. By the time I started going, my dad was like, I can't have three sons and none of them support Liverpool. So he took me to Liverpool. But then, just like you, we could get tickets for Luton because obviously we could get tickets for Luton.
So
I was mascot for Luton, season ticket holders, everything. But I used to wear my Liverpool shirt underneath my jacket.
Yeah, but the nice thing is as well, is you can pick and choose. So when Reading have been flirting with relegation the last few years in the Championship, I've barely followed them. They're top of the league at the time of recording. I've gone back to calling Reading we. We're top of the league, lads. Exactly.
It's a bit like sort of stringing along a second girlfriend, isn't it? A little bit, but like keeping them at arm's distance.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow,
yeah,
I painted myself as a real bad boy there. I never did that.
It's important. This is early in this series and in this podcast. It's important that the listeners know Jim is a player.
Someone's
got to be the bad boy on this podcast, and I'm happy to take that mantle.
I want to point out that you can't see this, but Jim is doing this podcast. Behind him is a portrait of his mother-in-law, genuinely. And he's just bragging about his non-existent sexual conquests in front of a picture of his mother-in-law.
Yeah, and I can feel the eyes burning in the back of my head as I'm talking.
It's one of those pictures, the eyes follow you around the room, isn't it?
She's actually buried two holes in it and he's standing on the side of the wall.
Like
those old Pink Panther movies. Look, we've talked about why you're not a Reading fan. Why are you a Liverpool fan? How did you become a Liverpool fan?
It's I wish I had a better reason. I'd love to say, my mum and dad are from Liverpool or you know, my uncle's from Liverpool. My reason is the first time I fell in love with football and watched it was the 98 World Cup. Was my first real... I watched a bit of like Premier League Match of the Day, but I was 7 years old. I didn't really know much about it other than I quite liked watching a ball go into the back of the net and stuff. But the 98 World Cup was my first proper Panini sticker book. I knew all the players, you know. I knew that Nawaf El Temyat was playing in midfield for Saudi Arabia. I knew that Sami Al-Jabbar was up front.
He's guest next week.
you've got Nawaf. Send him my love. And actually, when you see him, just say I said booger booger booger. He'll know what it's about. But the 98 World Cup was my first ever proper, just obsessive. Knew every player. Knew, watched every game. Watched every second. You know, when you're staying up for, you know, Turkey, Cameroon, and all that. And it was just Michael Owen. I was a Michael Owen fan before I was a Liverpool fan, and he scored that goal against Argentina, and I had an England shirt there on the back. So it was that. And then obviously, the good thing about football is it primes you well for life, because I learnt about heartbreak and loss very early on, because he then moved to Real Madrid a few years later. I've got a wardrobe full of Owen shirts, posters on the wall. And, you know, I've had trust issues ever since. It's left deep scars on all my relationships since. But no, so obviously Michael Owen left. But by that point, it's bigger than the player now.
So
he left. I fell in love with, you know, who Patrick Berger was still knocking around somewhere with dodgy knees. So I was like, yeah, Patrick, you know, you'll
class.
Do. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We bought Jibril Cissé. I loved him. He broke his leg. You know, I don't know why I do it to myself, but... yeah, so just stay with Liverpool ever since.
And like, so you were kind of an England fan during that balmy summer, and then you loved Michael Owen, and then the Premier League started up again. You're like, well, I'll just carry on with this Michael Owen by then.
Yeah, that was it. And do you know the funny thing is that it's a sign that we've done really well the last few years, because when we were finishing eighth under Roy Hodgson, no one was going, glory supporter.
Yeah.
When we had Jay Spearing, Lucas and Aquilani in midfield every week, no one was going, oh, so you only support Liverpool because they're doing well at the moment. But the last 2 years, so much abuse. Why are you a Liverpool fan, mate? It wasn't a problem. Under Rodgers and Hodgson. But stuck with them. And, you know, you can change your wife, you can change your job, you can't change your team.
Can you? Well, this is news.
I'll look into that. The player's back in again. I can change my wife. Classic JD. Before the end of the pod, he'll have another one. Knee-deep in clunge.
Could I change all six of them?
It really tallies up with my Bernard Manning stand-up material as well, doesn't it? So that's great. So, I mean, you could have been supporting a completely different team. If it had been Shearer banging in that goal, or Paul Merson, could have been an Arsenal fan.
It's a scary thought.
Who else? Ferdinand playing for at the time?
If Tim Flowers had had the tournament of his life coming off the bench in goal,
Blackburn forever.
I'd have Blackburn Rovers. Cut me open, I'd bleed blue and white.
Stuart Pearce put David James up front. They could have put Tim Flowers up against Argentina in the last few minutes. He could have nodded one in, and for the rest of your life, you're Blackburn Rovers.
I'll tell you what, the Argentines wouldn't know what to do with Tim Flowers up top. They wouldn't know a good old-fashioned long ball up there.
Sliding doors.
There is a sliding doors moment. So you're right. I guess if Michael Owen hadn't, you know, torn it up that tournament, I guess would have supported whoever else played well.
It's an interesting theory, Dave, because most people support a team because it's their dad's team, or they get taken to a game by a family member or something. The player route, I wasn't even expecting that. That's a different route.
Yeah. Well, so my dad is a diehard fisherman and he loves his cricket. And he used to go to Reading when he was a kid, but he kind of drifted out of football. And it was I discovered football for myself. So usually it's your dad, but dad shoved cricket down my throat, which I love as well. I used to watch cricket and boxing with dad, but football he wasn't too fussed by at the time. And then actually, weirdly, it was the other way around. Through me, dad fell back in love with football.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then he was like, well, I'll go back to being a Reading fan because, you know, I watched them on the terraces when I was a kid with my dad and stuff. So I never had that influence of... Otherwise, I'm sure I would have been a Reading fan, but I never had that influence. So I just picked Liverpool for myself, basically.
Yeah, I think my dad was a bit was a similar kind of thing. And he sort of supported Liverpool as a kid, sort of came in and out. And then when he had kids that liked football, he's like, I'm going to go all in here. And then he even started coaching like my school team and stuff one day. They were like, there's no manager, so he can't play. And my dad was like, I'll do it. And he had no idea. He put some cones out. He gave us, whoever did the most keepy uppies, he gave a pack of Chew-Its. And that was from there.
He's got a tattoo of Abel Xavier on his back.
He's all in.
He's in. He's in for a penny and for a pound.
That's amazing. I'm a Palace fan because my dad was a Palace fan, and what's been nice is in later years it's brought us closer together. So we now sit together at Palace, and it's a bonding experience. I think for a lot of dads and sons, can be an awkward experience sometimes, that bond if it's not there. So it's brought us together. I will say, my brother Sebastian, when we were younger, refused to be a Palace fan, I think to annoy me and dad, and randomly chose Everton, similar route to you, off the back of an Everton player, and that player is the much lauded and hugely successful Danny Cadamattery. because he liked his dreadlocked hair, and then Seb tried to braid his hair like that. I mean, it did not work on a 11-year-old white boy from Kent. And then thankfully he's come back to the Palace side as well. But I do think it's interesting that connection between dad and son. Football can be such a big one.
Well, I guess your dad was gutted as well, because that's an expensive Christmas, when it's expensive getting Cadamattery on the back of your shirt.
Yeah.
Why didn't you like Alan Stubbs? I'd have saved the fortune.
Or Lee T. Your team. Yeah. I've got Denver Barr here. He's a lovely fella. Special offer.
Hey everyone, hope you're enjoying the podcast. If you're a fan of live comedy, Dave and I are both doing solo shows at the Leicester Comedy Festival on Saturday, February the 19th, which is just around the corner. Both shows at the LCB Depot Courtyard Room. My show is up first at 4:15 p.m. It's called Jim Daly, Football and Fatherhood. It's a show about my love of football and how it's helped me become a new dad. It literally does what it says on the tin. It's a sweet, funny show, and I'd love you to be there if you live in Leicester or any of the cities or towns around. And are free on Saturday, February the 19th at 4:15 p.m. Please do come along. The show is free/pay what you want.
And straight after Jim's show at Leicester Comedy Festival is my brand new show, Dave Bibby Remakes Jurassic Park While Trying to Bring Up a Baby. It's a remake of the classic film, but where we make things just a little bit scarier or updated for the modern world. For example, the T-Rex now has the personality of Priti Patel, and the Triceratops poo is made exclusively out of all of Laura Koonsberg's tweets. So check that out at Leicester Comedy Festival, or if you're based in London in the South East, it will be at the Museum of Comedy in March. Hope to see you there.
Let's move on then, Dave, to the next bit. The next bit is firsts. So, Toby, tell us about your first Liverpool game.
So, I was racking my brains about this. My first Liverpool game was, I went to Birmingham City away. Ooh. We lost 2-1, but I was in the Birmingham end. And I was young, really young. My dad and I went. My dad's mate, Ray, was a Birmingham fan. He said, "Oh, come sit with us." We rock up. We're in the middle of the Zulus. We're in the sketchiest part of St. Andrews. I'm honestly, I reckon I'm 8 or 9 with an Owen 10 shirt underneath my jacket. And, you know, I walked in thinking, you know, they're not going to punch an 8-year-old. As soon as I looked around me, I went, these guys have definitely punched 8-year-olds. No question. They've got no, they'll punch anyone in an away shirt. So we sat there, and it was not actually an enjoyable experience. I've done it 2 or 3 times. That sitting in the wrong end, I don't like it. But I sat Birmingham away, St. Andrews. We lost 2-1. Michael Owen, who was the only reason I wanted to go. Well, not the only reason, but all I cared about was, oh my God, I'm going to see Michael Owen. He had a strain. He came off the bench. So I only saw 20 minutes of him. He did nothing. We just spent 90 minutes lumping it up to Heskey on his own with no Owen to make any runs for him. But yeah, lost 2-1. My first game at Anfield, West Ham at home. I sat in the Anfield Road end. 0-0. Craig Bellamy, 2008. Craig Bellamy was playing for West Ham, hit the post. They should have nicked it. It was the year we nearly won the league under Rafa. And that's my first Anfield. But that moment of, I regret that I always take that for granted now that I've got a season ticket, but I got in there about an hour and a half early, watched the warm-up, stared around, you know, soaked it in. Now I just about get in at 2:57 on a Saturday, just in time for You'll Never Walk Alone, you know, a few beers beforehand. But that first moment, yeah, if I know... you're going to hate this, Jim, because you're outnumbered by Liverpool fans. But as a Liverpool fan, you see Anfield on the TV as a kid, and it's You'll Never Walk Alone. It's famous European nights. It's all the things. And the Paisley, Shankly gates and all that. When you walk there, you're like, oh my God, it's actually real. Like that, it's not a Hollywood set. This is genuinely all here. So yeah, that rubbish game, 0-0, should have lost it, but you never forget your first.
Do you still get that feeling when you go to Anfield now?
Yeah, I'm in the Kop every week now, which is special, and so it's obviously a commute. I live in London, work in London. It's a, you know, it's a 6-hour round trip plus a game in the middle. It's your whole day taken out.
Yeah.
But I never want to, I don't just pick and choose. I don't just do your Cities and your Man U's. I made sure I went to Watford, Newcastle, Aston Villa, no disrespect to those teams. I made sure I went to every game I could physically get to last season. It was my first year ever having a season ticket. And I've dreamt of having a season ticket. I was on the waiting list for 17 years. I was like, I'm not going to, I'd never want to like, take for granted the fact that I can go to Anfield, which is my favourite place on the planet. So yeah, did all the European away games that I could afford to and where I could get the time off work. So it's been awesome. It's been surreal. It's been great.
Yeah. I seem to remember you going to quite a few when we were doing the Yahoo Sports Show and just about making it back in time and things like that. A few away days of that amazing season when we won the Champions League and stuff.
Did Paris Saint-Germain on a Wednesday night. I did Barcelona on a Wednesday night and got back for work on Radio X. Was in the building at 9:40 on air at 10 a.m. having not slept.
Did that
twice. That was rogue. I played a lot of music that day.
So just going back to Michael Owen, have you met Michael Owen since?
I haven't, but obviously, you know, he's you know, if I'd met Michael Owen when I was 10, I'd have wet myself. I think if I met him now, I'd be like, bit of a shame about going to Man U there, mate.
he's a bit of a, can I say this? It's our podcast. He's a bit of an oddball.
Is he?
Is Michael Owen that has watched 5 movies in his life and 4 of them are Rocky?
Yes, that is true. That is true. And he's never had a cup of tea, has he?
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Oh, I never trust anyone that's not had a cup of tea.
No. That's you're one step away from bodies under the floorboards there.
I think that's just a case of, he's like football's version of a child star, isn't he? When you're so good, so young, you don't get a chance to be normal, to knock about with your mates and do these things and have other hobbies. He was just literally like, he was out inspiring young Terrence at 18 years old.
There's a story of that along those lines that has blown my mind, right? Robbie Williams, his missus, a few years ago said she sometimes forgets how young and how famous he was at a young age. And she went, he saw a cucumber in the fridge a few weeks back and he didn't know what it was. And she went, what? And he went, what's that? She goes, that's a cucumber. And he goes, oh, she goes, how do you not know? She goes, he goes, well, I've only ever seen it chopped up in like a gin and tonic. But the thing was, right, the interviewer didn't press her because she was like, to be fair, he was in take that at 15. I went, I knew what a cucumber was when I was 15.
Like he missed the final term of school where you learn what a cucumber is.
Yeah, he doesn't know anything about Pythagoras' theorem and he can't pick a cucumber out of the lineup.
Just before you graduate, guys, this is a cucumber, that's a kumquat. Best of luck, keep in touch.
Also, a cucumber doesn't stop being a cucumber when it's cut up. Completely different.
I think even in my mind, I could look at a cut-up cucumber and just about work out what that looks like all put back together.
Oh, I'd love to be that famous that I didn't know what a vegetable
cucumber was.
let's move on, Toby, to your first kit. So that Owen 10 kit, was that your first kit?
Owen, I got the Owen every single year for my birthday, October 29th, because you're about 6 weeks into the season, maybe 2 months into the season. Every single year, that was my birthday request. I want, and obviously at that age, full kit. You know, I want shorts and socks.
At what age does full kit stop becoming acceptable and start becoming weird?
That's an excellent question.
Around puberty.
Yeah. 13. I traded my football socks for pubes.
Down the market.
Yeah. It's a weird deal they had on. Where is that teacher actually nowadays? So it was full kit, but 0-10. Although I want to say my very first Liverpool shirt, I think, was 0-18 on the back.
Oh, wow. Ooh, you're an original Owen fan. You're a League Cup Michael Owen.
Yeah, before he was famous. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, before his Argentina guy. I remember his goal against Wimbledon when he came off the bench. So 0-18, then 0-10, 0-10, 0-10, 0-10. And then, true story, Owen left Real Madrid. I cried. We signed Gibril Cissé. I got Cissé 9. The day that I got my Cissé 9 shirt, we played Blackburn. I was like buzzing. Gibril Cissé, 9 on the back. He broke his leg horrendously. Do you remember that horrendous leg break?
Yeah.
So I've now got a defunct shirt for the rest of the season. I've had it for 4 hours. My mate, we'd both gone into Guildford Town near us and got the shirts, the old fashioned where you watch them print it in front of you, and it was exciting. Yeah. He's a Chelsea fan. He's got Adrian Mutu 7 on the back. 2 days later, he gets a ban for cocaine. We're sat there with Gibril Cissé 9, Adrian Mutu. We both, that was an unlucky trip to the shops, that one.
And what a day out. I remember a mate of mine who's a Newcastle fan had the same thing, and it was ongoing. Whoever his favourite player was would get injured every year. And he was like, I can't believe this. And eventually he just bit the bullet and got Titus Bramble because he was sick. And he was like, right, if I'm going to jinx someone, it's going to be him.
Do you remember the Aaron Ramsey thing where every time Aaron Ramsey scored a goal, someone famous died?
That's right. It wasn't like it happened 4 or 5 times. It was like his first 15 goals for Arsenal. It got to the point where no one cheered when he scored. Everyone just went, oh no.
R.I.P. whoever. Yeah.
Somebody check Attenborough's all right.
Yeah, please, not the Queen or Attenborough. Come on,
not on her birthday. Come on, Aaron.
And with kits, are you a kit man now? Have you got like any classic Liverpool kits that you wear now, or when you go to a game, are you wearing a shirt?
Well, I did that classic, I like doing that thing now where you complain about the prices. Now that I'm a proper fan, I like to whinge about, it's ridiculous. A day out for me, train ticket to the game, couple of beers, a bit of a pie, do you know what I mean? So I don't get the kit every season. However, I just wear my Dalgleish 1977 Rome kit because I figured, well, whatever happens... Yeah. That's happened now. So that shirt is timeless forever. So that's my going to games kit. And it served me quite well the last 2 years. So I'm afraid to wear anything else.
I think that's the way to go, is to get a classic kit and then just stick with it. Same with England. Get a 96 England shirt or something like that and then just rock that.
Yeah, I completely agree. I just realised, what's the point of getting a new kit every season? Having said that, I did very kindly get given a shirt for this season by Standard Chartered. So thank you, Standard Chartered.
It's a great shirt. It's probably the best one.
Oh, best, yeah. Yeah. Kenny who?
Well, Dave, you've got a theory, haven't you, about names on the back of shirts?
Well, my theory is you can't have someone on the back of your shirt who's younger than you.
That is weird.
It's just like you can look up to these players, like you can have Michael Owen when you're a kid, but I can't be cutting about with Joe Gomez on the. I'm 35, right? I can't have this young man, and like, it just doesn't sit right with me.
If I get Harvey Elliott on the back, I'm on some sort of register.
It's not on. Who's at Blackburn at the moment? It's almost really your team for the 10th floor. But it's harder for Jim and I now. We are running out of players that we're allowed to get. Yeah. If I follow that fit. I think James Milner is like 6 months younger than me.
Is he?
Who's like joke old. He's so old that I make jokes about him being old and just hope that no one calls me out on my age.
He scored a penalty against Leicester last season and celebrated by pretending he needed a walking stick.
He's younger than me.
He's younger than you. I turned 29 this year, and the worst thing about that was I don't sign players my age on Football Manager. Yeah. I'm like, no, he's past it, that bloke. He's washed up, he has. I'm like,
it's a terrible investment.
Being a football fan does give you a skewed view on age, and it makes you 30 seem incredibly old when we all know it's the new 20. It's not old at all.
But then also, even when I was younger, when you get to about 19, I found myself talking about, like, you know, I'd say, oh, that kid's a good player. But he's 4 years older than you. He's like 23. Yeah, that kid's going places. You're like 17. You're like, yeah, he's a good player, that kid. It works both ways. You've got to be more self-aware, really.
Again, then, when does a young player stop being a young player? When do they start becoming...
20 for the under 21s. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, when you get these, sometimes you get these under 21 tournaments and that you're allowed to pick like one or two slightly over or something like that. And you get these like 23, 24 year olds who are like, why is Raheem Sterling playing for the under 21s all of a sudden?
Didn't Nigel Riakoka just used to play for the under 21s like when he was like 32? He used to always rock up.
Like that kid in the playground that's way too old, but everyone's too scared to say no. So just let him.
Well, because he was like the only player that was good enough to get in the under 21s but hadn't got an England cap. So there was some loophole. We're like, yeah, he's still good to go. Riakoka's available.
A sympathy cap.
Yeah, exactly that.
Well, because Theo Walcott is in his 30s now, but I think I would still refer to him as like promising young Theo Walcott.
Yeah, there's a few knocking around out. Like, there's players by now that if ever it was going to happen, Alex Iwobi, if it was going to happen, it would have happened. He scored 1 in 33 for Everton last season. Yeah. We need to accept Alex Iwobi. No.
It's not one for the future. He's not going to turn the corner.
That's how the rest of the comedy industry sees my stand-up career, I think, as well.
So, look, if it was going to happen for Jim, you know.
Just, mate, respectfully, just come on.
Bernard Manning was selling out the Palladium by that age.
Dave, shall we move on to favourites?
Yeah, why not, mate?
For Toby now.
So we've established favourite player initially is Michael Owen.
Yeah.
He's your first favourite player. Who is your favourite ever player?
Stevie G, all day long. No question asked. Stevie G. He was captain fantastic. It wasn't even, although it was great, I mean, he was the only player to have scored in a FA Cup final, League Cup final, Champions League final, and Europa League final. I'm pretty sure he still holds that record, and at a World Cup and a Euros. But it wasn't just the fact that he was the man for the big occasion. I remember we beat Derby 1-0 in the Premier League season when they only got like 9 points. We beat him in the 93rd minute because Gerrard popped up. Yeah. It was every week. It was every week when he played in awful sides. I mean, make no mistake about it, that side that won the 2005 Champions League is a horrendous football team.
Yeah.
But through the middle, they had Carragher, Hoopier, Gerard Alonso. And that won them the tournament. Nothing else around it. Gerard just... the Gerard-Lampard Scholes debate. Lampard and Scholes were absolutely amazing. Different players. Lampard probably scored more goals. Scholes sat in front of the back four a bit more and sprayed it around a bit more. But Gerard, if he had played in those great Chelseas and those great Man U sides, we'd be talking about him... I mean, the best player in the Premier League era, maybe. That's how much I rated. I always think, well, he did play one season behind Torres, where Lampard used to play, and he scored 16 league goals. Yeah. When Rodgers needed him at the end of his career to sit in front of the back four and ping the ball around like Pirlo, he did it, and he was the best in the league at it. I just felt like he was there was nothing he couldn't do on a football pitch. I'm the best player I've seen live for Liverpool all day long.
I get the feeling with Gerrard, because obviously everyone loves the sort of the banter and the debate and the argument. And then things generally, after someone's retired, it starts to settle down. But still, other teams, they always bring up Lampard and Scholes and things like that. I still think we're waiting for Gerrard to get the respect he deserves. But then I'm a Liverpool fan like you, so I rate him in the exact same way. Like, he was heading his own crosses for a couple of seasons. And I'm waiting for it to settle down and for someone to go, yeah, he's one of the Premier League's best ever. But I don't know, the rivalry's there so much that people don't let it get in the way of good old-fashioned banter.
The thing is, right, and we're all football fans, look, if I didn't support Liverpool and Gerrard in a team huddle said, don't let this slip now, and then a week later slipped and cost Liverpool the league, I'd find it hilarious.
Yeah.
But if I was a Chelsea fan watching Demba Ba run through and score that goal, I'd bring it up all the time. I find John Terry slipping at the Champions League final hilarious. That's part of being a football fan. You know that, especially in this world of social media, that everybody wants every other team to slip up constantly. Yeah. We all want Arsenal to miss out on the top four and take the mick out of them. We all want City to not win the league. You know, we're all in the same boat. So I completely get the Gerrard stuff. Look, I would do the same if it wasn't a Liverpool player. I have no qualms with that. What is nice is, forget at Kevin42068 on Twitter, everyone that's played the game, they wax lyrical about Steven Gerrard. Yeah. They wax lyrical about him so much. So yeah. I will take the opinion of Zinedine Zidane, who said he was the best player in the world for 3 years. I'll take his opinion over Kevin on Twitter. but I do completely understand the ribbing of Steven Gerrard never winning a league title. Of course, we're football fans. The whole point of football is that people take the mick out of you when it's going badly, and you're unbearably smug when it's going well. That's being a fan.
I wouldn't know. I'm a Palace fan, so I'd imagine that's the case. I've just thought of a new category as you're talking there, Dave. I hope that you don't mind me slipping in. We'll see how it goes. It is the Gerrard slip against... Obviously, you've won the league since, but at slipping the time, the Gerrard, is that the worst, your worst moment as a Liverpool fan?
Do you know what helped with that? Is I was working in a pub at the time and I could not get the day off for love nor money. I tried swapping shifts, I tried everything. So I was following it on my phone. So it was heartbreaking. I remember basically crying behind the coffee machine. Is that latte coming, Toby? Yeah, it's on the way. But so I think not physically seeing it live softened the blow a little bit. I'm trying to think. Palace wasn't great.
Chris Tambour
wasn't great. Throwing away the foot. Losing the Champions League final to Milan wasn't great. Gerrard's slip is definitely, I'd say, missing out on that league title because it had been all those years is probably the worst I've felt as a Liverpool fan. And you feel like an idiot because we'd beaten City a few weeks earlier, and I was running around that living room like you would not. I'll be honest, I thought we'd won the league, and it was the first time my head had ever accepted it. But I was like, that was, I'd say that is probably the lowest point. I'd still take missing out on the league, as heartbreaking as it was. The lowest point was the Hodgson days. I remember us...
Oh, here we go.
Do you know what I mean? But I remember, like, it's because there'll be fans listening to this who support, no disrespect, Port Vale. And they're going, I'd love it if my worst thing was that time you just missed out on winning the Premier League. So I guess the lowest point in terms of actually the team was rubbish was, I remember Hodgson. Now, this is Roy Hodgson, and Jim, as a Crystal Palace fan, you could talk about this. You know, lovely bloke. You know, I'm sure he's a nice chap. You know, I'd love to have a glass of water with him. But he sets teams up not to lose, is what he's done his whole career, which is why he's done a great job at Fulham, a great job at Palace, struggled at Inter Milan, struggled at Liverpool, where you're expected to go out and win games. I remember us playing Birmingham away, and he played three holding midfielders. He played Christian Poulsen, Jay Spearing, and Lucas, and we drew 0-0. And I went, well, of course we drew 0-0. It's three midfielders sitting in front of a back four that isn't being tested by Birmingham. And the football we played there was horrendous. Paul Konchesky at left back. I mean, Milan Jovanovic was the big sexy side. It was a horrendous team, that. So, yeah, that was pretty bleak. So that was the lowest time in terms of watching. I didn't actually enjoy watching my team every week.
That's worse than missing out, isn't it? Like, you have highs in football, you have lows. Like, you could lose a cup final, you can win a cup final. But watching your team and being like, or seeing that they're on Sky Sports at 4 o'clock on a Sunday and going, I suppose I should watch. You know, like, that's worse.
I mean, that Rodgers side that lost the league scored 100 and something league goals that year. I mean, it was never dull. Yeah. But that Hodgson time, genuinely, it was exactly that. Oh, we've got the Friday night kickoff. Oh, I guess I'll watch us draw 0-0 at home to Blackpool.
Well, you'll be delighted to hear that he still plays three defensive midfielders, to this day.
I have followed that Palace Hodgson era very closely, and I'm like, yes.
One who, like you're saying about Stevie G, if we talk to any other coach in the world, including Pep Guardiola and Jurgen Klopp, they revere him. They love him.
Oh, they love him. They love him. I always say with that Palace side, you know, Jim, you and me are very much in the same boat because I know that some Palace fans get sick of Hodgson. But I'm like, have you seen the team he's got? Just surely staying up comfortably every year. It's a good season.
Absolutely. Yeah. That would be wonderful. Last word on Stevie G. I know we've moved away from him, but I hope you guys don't take this in an offensive way.
Let's be honest, he probably is
meant in that way. Stevie G for me is like the... I thought he was a great player, and he's like the nearly man, you know, never won the title, came so close. I think because it's Liverpool, people don't give him the respect. If he'd have been playing for a more let's say, likeable team, like a Newcastle or like, you know, if you've been like Leicester's top appearance holder and got so close, people, there'd be documentaries about it and people would be crying about Stevie G. But I purely think because it's Liverpool, people are like, well, fuck him.
I agree. I am very upfront about the fact that I'd say we are the team that has the most Schadenfreude when things go wrong. I would. And I get it. I talked about it earlier. We love telling you about famous European nights. We love telling you about five Champions League. We love telling you about the atmosphere at Anfield and how special it is. We love still banging on about Kenny Dalglish 30 years later and living in the past and stuff like that. We are a largely unbearable fan base, and sometimes we even annoy me. But I remember we had Carlton Cole on the Yahoo Sports show, and it was when Liverpool and City were going for the title, and we outright asked him, who do you want to win the league? And he said, Man City, because Liverpool fans will be unbearable. And I said to Carlton Cole, I said, Carlton, I'll tell you now as a Liverpool fan that we will be absolutely unbearable. We are unbearable. So yeah, I agree. If Gerrard had done a Matt Le Tissier and just been brilliant for Southampton, then he'd be much easier to stomach.
Instead, and then gone on Twitter and tweeted conspiracies about COVID-19. We'd love him.
Perfect. Similar. Perfect. Exactly that. I do think Liverpool fans annoy other fans a lot, and I don't apologise for that.
Is there a big difference between your social media Liverpool fans and your match day Liverpool fans?
Yeah, I think there's a... I think one thing that's really nice at Anfield is we get behind the players, even if Adrian's having a mare, we get behind him. I think there's a really nice...
And doesn't he?
he tries to make us fall out with him. He gives it a damn good go. But on social media, especially also with a club that's so huge as Liverpool, you get a lot of international people on Twitter.
Yeah.
So you just see a lot, you know, you click on any sort of... Genie Wijnaldum will put a tweet up saying, great 3 points there and a few photos of him. And I make the mistake of clicking on the comments. And some bloke in Ecuador... who's got, you know, Mo Salah as his profile picture called Ecuador LFC, who's tweeted being like, you're rubbish, Naby Keita should play every week. I'm like, we just won the game. Yeah. So I think I think we're good at not getting on the team's back. Having said that, I remember at the peak of us being rubbish under Hodgson, I think it was Hodgson, I went up to Anfield back when I could only get general sale tickets, and I went by myself and I sat, and we lost 3-1 at home to Aston Villa. Benteke scored twice. And that was the peak of us playing awfully.
Yeah.
And the crowd were getting on the team's back around that point. Every team's fickle. Football fans are fickle. You can play rubbish if you win 1-0. You never think about the bad performance again. If you lose 1-0, you slate the team the whole way home and then you have a drink and forget about it. But yeah, it's...
The Hodgson thing is like, for some people are like, oh, that's disrespectful. The so-called great Liverpool fans, you know, a great man like that. But it just didn't fit. It didn't work.
Nah, yeah.
And I feel the same with Man United fans now. They're past their sort of peak at the moment. And they've had a couple of managers like Mourinho, who's obviously quite... defensive manager, and now Ollie, who's a kind of clueless manager. So like, they don't know where to put themselves. They don't know whether they should be supportive or whether they should just go, you know what, he's playing boring football, or he's tactically not for us, or what, you know, whatever it is. And it's so hard to know where to pitch yourself. You don't want to get behind your team, but you also like, the best way for me to get behind my team is to do what's best for the club. It's so hard to know what to do, when to back a manager or a player, and when to be like, oh my god, he is rubbish.
It's so true. There is always a line. But I think with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the other thing is Roy Hodgson didn't score the winning goal in the Champions League final for Liverpool.
Yeah.
Although I wish he had.
It would have been a long time ago.
Yeah. It was him. It was him up front, and Ferenc Puskás up front at the other end. I do think there's an element of Solskjaer, especially, is, well, he's definitely not the right manager. We need a new manager, but he is a legend and he's a likable. I'm half Norwegian, so I don't want to. Look, as a Liverpool fan, I want Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, give him a 20-year contract, you know. He's a nice bloke, but he's not gonna I always say, over 38 games, is he going to outmanage Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, Jose Mourinho? Of course he's not.
No.
Of course he's not. He might one day go on to... When Rodgers left Liverpool, I said he might go on to be an amazing manager one day, but it was a job too soon for him. Well, it got a soul shot. You can't... I finished sixth with Molde in the Norwegian league. I'm definitely the guy to get the best out of Paul Pogba after Mourinho and Van Gaal failed. I mean, what do you expect?
It does feel like they've... Anyway, it's not about them, but they've had a caretaker manager for about 18 months.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's move on then with faves to favourite ever game.
I mean, there's only one, isn't there? It is Istanbul 2005, which is my happiest watching football memory ever. Wasn't there, of course, couldn't get tickets. I was only 14, but so I watched it. The whole run was amazing. The Chelsea semi-final was mad. The Juventus quarter-final was mad at Anfield. But I remember the Olympiacos game, the whole run was amazing. Yeah. But I remember watching the final with my dad. And the finals used to be on a Wednesday as well. They've moved them to the weekend, but it was a Wednesday. Yeah. And we talked about, let's be honest, with football, the worst thing about when your team's losing is you know you're going to get ribbed by your mates. And I went to school in Surrey, Cobham, where the Chelsea training ground is. Everyone in my year was a Chelsea fan apart from me. So we beat them in the semi-final. I am unbearable at school. Unbearable. My mate Luke's got Idegger Johnson on the back of his shirt. He's missed that sitter at the end of that game at Anfield. I've slated him. And then it gets to the final. The whole of my year want Liverpool to lose. And at 3-0 down, I cried. And because I could just hear, when you're 14, I could just hear the taunting at school the next day. Like, it's going to be horrendous. I've got like 100 Chelsea fans to look forward to tomorrow morning. We're 3-0 down. At that point, I was like, this could be 5 or 6. We were getting battered. Make no mistake about it. We're getting battered. And then the rest is history. 3 goals. I remember I went up to my room at halftime and cried, and I threw my toys out the pram and said I wasn't going to watch the second half. And my dad being... from a different generation and also being raised by my grandfather who had 2 military crosses in the army, was just going, well, just don't be pathetic, mate. Just stop crying and come down and watch the second half.
Simple as that, yeah.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, probably will now, I guess. So I came down sulking, almost angry that my dad's making me sit through this torture.
Yeah.
We score one and I go, well, at least it's not as embarrassing. We get the penalty, the second one. When that goes in, I'm off. Because we're 1 goal behind now. We're still 40 minutes to play. So I'm buzzing at this point. 2 minutes later, Smita scores that goal. Milan Baroš, the best thing he ever did in a Liverpool shirt was get out of the way of that shot.
Yeah.
When you watch the replay, Smita drills it and Baroš kind of turns around and breathes in. If he had our bellies, that goal never goes in. But he sucks his belly in and it flies past him. 3-3. That save from Dudek off Shevchenko at the end. It was just one of those nights. I remember, I've only done this twice in my life, and this isn't exaggerating. This isn't after the event adding a nice fairy tale story. I woke up in the morning and I didn't believe it happened. I woke up half asleep, thought maybe I've exaggerated it, and I ran down and checked the back page of the newspaper to confirm. But obviously I didn't need to turn it over to the back page because it was the whole front page as well, and I was just absolutely buzzing. So yeah. The best game of my life. I was at Barcelona 4-0 last season, and that was the best live game I've ever been to. That was very, very special. But yeah, best game of my life will always be. I can't imagine it being
with those two games, and I don't want to keep bringing it back to Istanbul. Obviously, yes. I do. I'm joking. I will wherever possible.
Yeah.
When Dwight Gayle scored his first goal in that game and made it 3-2, I knew, and this has never happened prior or since, I knew we were going to equalise. There was something in the atmosphere at the stadium. Where you could sense it. Mm. Did you get that feeling with either of those games that you just knew Liverpool were going to do it?
But I am the most pessimistic fan. I don't bet on Liverpool games because I always think we're going to lose. We'll have, you know, even under Jurgen Klopp where we're killing it, we'll go and draw Wycombe Wanderers at home in the FA Cup and I'll be going, oh, I don't know, they drew with Stockport last week. You know, I'm so negative. So, and my dad, who was obviously wanted Liverpool to win, was buzzing. And I think even the most ardent anti-Liverpool fan that night maybe wanted it to happen.
Yeah.
But my dad just kept going at 3-3. My dad kept going, no, your name's on the cup. And I kept telling him to shut up. He's going, no, it's written. It's written. You're not throwing it away from here. When Dudek makes that save off Shevchenko, my dad's going, no, it's written. It's written. Your name's on the cup. And I was going, Dad, shut up. But yeah, so it was, I didn't ever believe it. I didn't believe it. But my dad was adamant. He's like, nah, it's one of those nights. But interestingly, with Chris Dan Ball, on the flip side, I knew we were going to concede the third.
Yeah, of course. You did.
I remember our defensive line at one point. Sacco was at centre back. He was on the 6 yard line when you were sending long balls in. I was like, push up, lads, clear out.
If you want an insight into Palace's scouting technique, we saw that guy and thought, let's make him our most expensive ever player.
Hello, there's a guy.
We love selling players to you. Palace and Bournemouth, like, this guy's not cut out to be a player at Liverpool. Call Palace.
Yeah.
Put the price up and call Palace.
Yeah. Oh, the money we've made, we sold Jordan Ive and Dominic Solanke to Bournemouth for a combined 32 million.
Yeah. That's mad.
And then bought Mane. Lovely stuff.
Yeah, it's good business.
It's great business. Actually, I remember being a Liverpool fan down south. I'm hearing all this and seeing the same thing. I was at university for Istanbul, and you know, Liverpool in a Champions League final for the first time since I was like 2 years old or whatever it was. So I'd waited my whole life for this. And so I got all my mates around, everyone. They're all Arsenal fans. I was in North London. Everyone's. And I remember at halftime, just popping to the loo and just having a moment. And I think I even said out loud, please just go home. Because I just wanted them. They were winding me up. And there's a West Ham fan there. And he brought, you know, and I was just like, I remember saying, just please, please go home. And by the end of it, all of them were Liverpool fans just for that little 10-minute period, for the penalties.
Yeah, yeah,
just
had
because
to
you
be.
Can't fail to get, you know, caught up in it all. It really, it was a genuinely special game. And what makes it better is we were rubbish then, as you say. We had a spine of a good team. We had a new manager. And it was okay to back Liverpool if you weren't Liverpool. Whereas fast forward to us now, we've played Madrid and lost in the final and played Spurs in the final and won. How did the sort of beating Tottenham and winning it, how did that feel compared to Istanbul?
I always think it felt like the Barcelona 4-0 was the cup final.
Yeah.
It felt like, a bit like my dad was saying, your name's on the cup. I didn't want to say it out loud, but I went to Madrid and I was there for the Champions League final. It was amazing. But in the back of my mind was this thought of, we're not turning around the Barcelona game and then losing to Spurs in the final. Yeah. We're not. And they made the mistake. The final was 3 weeks after the last game of the season. And it was a flat game. And I don't think it suited either Tottenham or Liverpool. I think Tottenham would have preferred to have played us with that Ajax game closer in their memory bank. It was a dour final, but you felt like both teams, Tottenham's final was the Ajax game and our final was the Barcelona game. And it was almost this afterthought of, oh yeah, and somebody, I guess, has to take the trophy home as well. But so Madrid was absolutely all. But the beauty of the Barcelona game was we had just lost the league to City.
Yeah.
And we had just, because we lost 3-0. At Barcelona, which I went to. That was a game I came back and made it to work the next day. We lost 3-0 in Barcelona. And that week, I can't remember what our result now was. We had a dodgy result that week that cost us the league title. And I went, this is so Liverpool. We've just thrown away the league and the Champions League in 4 days. Social media is loving it. I am not just saying this after the event. I went up on the train with my mate for the Liverpool-Barcelona second leg. And we both had work the next day. And my mate was very much, he was being so negative. Because don't forget, Firmino and Mane were out.
Yeah.
So it was Shaqiri and Origi.
Origi, yeah.
Yeah. That's why Origi scored twice.
Yeah.
So on the way up, my mate was going, mate, what? Like, we've both got work tomorrow. We've got to pay for this expensive train up, like stay in a hotel, which is a fortune, come back. We've got Shaqiri and Origi playing. Like, we can't do this. And I kept going, I'm not to say this, he will vouch for this. I kept going, mate, I don't know. I said, I said, if we get one early, I said, if we're 1-0 at half time, it's just nervous enough for them to do something stupid. But my problem is, I kept going, but they will score. I thought we could do it 5-1 if we just had a mad game with a bit of luck, a dodgy own goal, a few set pieces, something like that. I never thought 4-0 was possible. Or I thought 3-0 and we might take them to penalties. So that that atmosphere at Anfield that night was it was just like nothing I've ever. I cried at the full time of that. I'm starting to realise I cry a lot. Do you know the golfer Tyrrell Hatton was sat behind me. He's a big Liverpool fan, so he was sat behind me. I had no idea the whole night at that game, and at the final whistle, he got his camera out and filmed the scenes around Anfield. So me and my mate, I'm stood there with my head in my hands, just in shock. My mate's hugging me, and I'm just crying. Yeah. Anyway, the next day I get tagged on loads of people tagging me on Twitter because people are going, is that you? Is that you? Because Tyrrell Hatton had posted it on his social media. So there's a nice video out there of me crying my eyes out after that Barcelona game.
People say, don't they? And it's probably true that men aren't in connection with their emotions, but every single male football fan has cried at a football match.
Yeah, it's so true. And on the flip side, you should have heard the choice words I had for Everton the other week when Jordan Pickford hurt Van Dijk and Richarlison hurt Thiago and we were robbed from an offside decision in the last second. My missus, she was nearly crying at some of the things I was shouting at the TV.
She was like, I'm engaged to this? Oh, God.
I said some horrible things about Richarlison and I think several of his relatives as well.
The air was blue, but you weren't. Yeah. I think if I couldn't be a footballer, the job that I would like to do in football is to be the cameraman that picks out the crying kid. I absolutely love it. You know, when someone goes down in the final day of the season and a crazy twist, I'll be like, don't worry, I've found a kid in a shirt. He's got a scarf, crying into his scarf. His dad's holding him. I've got it. Cut to me.
His next day at school is going to be awful.
Yeah. Oh, this is going to leave an indelible mark on his psyche for years to come. We've got to capture it.
I love my job.
Yeah. And then the other guy would be, the other cameraman's the guy who needs to find a beautiful woman, usually like a Brazil fan or something like that. I've got the crying kid covered. Someone else has zoomed in on some beautiful women. I mean, that's the job in football.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the two jobs you want. And do you know what's sad with the advent of the smartphone is you don't get the bloke crying holding a radio to his ear.
Yes. Yeah. No transistor radio. They've scored. Yeah, we're down.
Yeah,
we're down.
Yeah. But I have to admit, the season that we won the Champions League but lost the league, we could mathematically win the league on the last game of the season. We played Wolves at home and City played Newcastle. And the Wolves fans, credit where it's due, they stitched us right up. Yeah, they somehow spread a rumour from the away end that Newcastle had scored. And the cheer went round Anfield. I was sat in the posh bit. I was sat in the West Stand with the boxes. I could see the boxes behind me, and they had both games on the screens. So we were all going, it's definitely 0-0, but the whole of Anfield's cheering. And me and my mate went, to be fair to Wolves, the bloke that started that, if I started that, I'd live off that anecdote for the rest of my life.
Oh, God, yeah.
I once convinced Anfield they were winning the league.
Yeah, there's going to be, I would say, roughly about 1,000 Wolves fans claiming to be that guy.
Yeah, there is.
Now.
Yeah.
That's
only, it can only be one of you. Yeah, it was very well played. Fair play.
Excellent. Let's move on then. Final favourite ever Liverpool kit.
I would say, obviously, my brand new Standard Chartered kit is up there. Thank you.
Do you get a quid every time?
I liked, we've had some shockers. I can tell you the worst kit. We had a third alternate kit that was yellow with green Carlsberg and like black hexagons coming from the two top corners. Do you remember that, Dave?
Oh, God, yeah. And if you wore it in the summer, you'd get all these little black flies all covering you in it.
That was rank. It was like a bad Watford kit, a really bad Watford kit. Yeah. But I like, there's not much you can do about home kits because they basically, every 4 years, they do something radical with the collar. Mm. That's their big... I've always felt sorry for teams that support teams of stripes. I'm sorry, Dave. How much can you do with a kit? Yeah. I'm sorry, Jim. You know what your kit's going to be.
Yeah. Well, not always. We had one kit back in 2016 or 15 where they made it like Ajax, one big stripe in the middle. So it was red with one big blue stripe. And Palace fans were like, this is not stripes, this is rubbish. And Steve Parish, our chairman, when they announced it at the end of season said, the reason we've done this is when the players stand in a line, arm round each other before a game, it will create stripes. And it turns out, no, it did not, and it was fucking terrible. It was awful. And he said that night, well, there's only so much you can do with stripes. And I would say that is the one phrase that has stuck around, followed Steve around since then, because it was awful. It was absolutely awful.
That's like a headline you see in like Vogue magazine.
Yeah.
Your tip for this summer, there's only so much you can do with stripes. Yeah. But I home kits, yeah, we've had a few pretty standard ones. I did like really back in the day, I'm going Vegard Hegum days. And a young Michael Owen, just the perfectly circular collar the whole way around.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Big fan of that.
Big
TT Kamara was up front that season.
Yes.
Yeah, Reebok shirt with just a simple white collar the whole way around. I thought that was a badass kit. Stiggins, Bjornaby at left back. What a team. But away kits, we had a really nice white one that I had Owen 10 on the back. I think it might have been Owen's last season when he had like a shaved head that year. White, green Carlsberg writing across the middle, and then like black down the sides. Really nice kit that was. That's a really nice kit. That
need to dig that out.
Yeah, that was a good kit. But no, I'd say that my first kit I fell in love with was the Vegard Hegum simple collar round that shirt. Do you ever see those things on social media when they go, "What does this kit? Which player does this kit remind you of?"
Yeah,
and weirdly, it's never. You know, Jamie Redknapp played in that team. Robbie Fowler played in that team. But Vegard Hegum is the guy I picture, and I don't know why. It's never the superstar.
He wore it well.
He rocked the shit out of it.
Toby, then think about the number of football podcasts that have been recorded this year in lockdown. I don't think a single one of them has used the phrase Vegard Hegum. So congratulations.
No. Yeah, and that's why this podcast is going places.
Exactly.
We are the Vegard Hegum of football podcasts.
What's your USP? Well, we talk about Vegard Hegum a hell of a lot.
That's one listener, at least. That's got to be one listener.
Yeah, Vegard's in.
So we'd like to have a bit of a leaderboard of all our guests taking on a chosen subject. You're absolutely guaranteed to go top of the league here.
Yeah.
like the team that plays on a Friday night.
Don't let it slip.
The first day of the season. Don't let it slip.
I've always felt if you have that game, right, the first game of the Premier League season, Friday night, and you draw it, what a missed opportunity that
is.
Tied top of the league for one night only.
Well, unless you're like Arsenal or Villa, maybe you get alphabetically, you can just pop ahead.
Yeah, that's it. That's where you want to be.
Yeah, it's a little bit more difficult.
West Brom fan crying into his cornflakes going, oh, man.
Every season.
you have a chosen subject that is associated with your club, and we're going to have 90 seconds on the clock. What is your chosen subject?
It's Hegum the early years.
They got Hegum's hair.
No, I have gone unsurprisingly, the 2005 Champions League campaign. I thought final would be a bit too specific and make my life easier. If I thought I'd go campaign.
I would just say Dave and I do another football quiz. My uncle Kieran runs it, and we did it last week, and everyone had to choose a mastermind subject. There was only two other lads that did it. One of them chose Man United squad numbers for the 97-98 campaign. One of them chose Newcastle 94-95. I chose Crystal Palace 2000 to 2020 and lost. So I just want to just be careful.
No, but I've got a lot of respect for you because learning squad numbers, that's just learning a list of numbers.
Yeah.
Hey, guy, unsurprisingly, Frack said 47.
Unsurprisingly, that guy won. So, well, Dave, I've got my stop clock here, so I'm happy to do timer if you want to do questions.
I'm nervous about this.
Okay, I believe in you.
I was 14. It was a long time ago.
I know. I'm really impressed that you've chosen something. I have to say, like, people ask me as a Liverpool fan about certain things, and my memory is kind of good. So, like random things, like saying like Vegard Hegum, like there'd be like one game against Norwich away in 2002 that I'll be like, this happened and that, and then other people would be like, oh, and of course you had so and so and Craig Bell. I was like, did he play for us? I don't remember.
So true.
There's a weird one. Thing.
I don't know why. There's a weird Liverpool game that fans have clung on to because we've beaten Chelsea loads since. But the time that we beat them 1-0 and Bruno Cheyrou scored, I've got that game burned. burnt into my memory bank. But I can't remember what we did home and away against West Ham last season. No. Yeah. And I was at both the games.
Yeah. It always blows my mind when people give it, oh, yeah, of course, in the 7th minute, so-and-so scored. You think, yeah, what? Yeah.
Well, Toby, if in doubt, just say Cheru, and we'll see if it comes up as
yeah,
a...
Yeah, okay, perfect. A,
right, your 90 seconds starts now.
The 2004-05 season was Rafa Benitez's first at Anfield. From which Spanish club did he arrive?
Valencia.
And which Liverpool striker left the club just before the start of the season?
Michael Owen.
Liverpool were in a group with Monaco, Olympiacos and Deportivo La Coruña. How many group games did they lose?
2.
In the final group match, Liverpool beat Olympiacos 3-1. The three Liverpool goal scorers were Steven Gerrard, Neil Mellor and who?
Florence and Mpongo.
Correct. I haven't said that on every other one, but I'm so glad you got it. What were Andy Gray's famous words in commentary when Gerrard scored the third?
Oh, you beauty. What a hit, son. What a hit.
Lovely stuff. And which player gave, quote, a lovely cushioned header, unquote, for Gerrard?
Neil Mellor.
Yes. Who were the defending Champions League champions that year?
Oh, for the year before? Chelsea?
Who were Liverpool's round of 16 opponents?
Juventus. No, Leverkusen.
I don't know the rules whether we take the first answer. What was, what was the aggregate score over the two legs against Leverkusen?
6-2.
Oh, well done. Into the quarterfinals against Juventus, which defender opened the scoring for Liverpool?
Sami Hupia.
In the semi-final second leg against Chelsea, Liverpool 1-0 thanks to the very controversial ghost goal from Luis Garcia. Which Chelsea player tried to clear the ball just after it was judged to have crossed the goal?
Oh, I would say that was William Gallas.
I've started to finish. That is the correct answer. Wow, so this is the first time we've done this. So I didn't know how many questions to prepare. We didn't even get to the final in the end. We got to the ghost goal. We got to the ghost. The next question was going to be about the final. In fact, right, I could load more if we needed them.
So I was putting down a little one every time Toby got one right. But I actually have no idea if they were right or not, because Dave just wasn't confirming if they were right or not. So I've actually no idea how many. I've got what two. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
Did we lose two in the group stages? I think we did. And we drew one.
This is why we've got you in, Toby, because you're just going to laugh when we mess up, basically, and not right, like these amateurs. You're just like, well, I knew they were amateurs before I came up.
Yeah, so
we can do this. So basically, we decided to do this mastermind thing, but then did they tell you if you get it right or not on mastermind? I can't remember. I think we see a score on the screen going up.
Oh, yeah.
But they don't. But so they just plow on, don't they? You were correct that. Benitez came from Valencia. Michael Owen left for Real Madrid. The group games was correct. We lost two group games. Yeah. Cinema Pongol was the only time I told you were correct. He was the third goal scorer. Oh, you beauty, what a hit, son. What a hit was correct. A lovely cushioned header was Neil Mellor. The previous Champions League champions.
Yeah, it wasn't right.
Porto.
Of course.
Jose.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so that's why we won it, because clearly it was a rebuilding time for Europe in general.
Porto had won the year before. That's right.
Which is a tough one. Then you sort of said that Juventus were the round of 16 opponents and then corrected yourself to Leverkusen. Jim, this is VAR. Are you giving them that?
Yeah, I think so.
Score was 6-2. That was correct. Sami Hupia opened the scoring and it was William Gallas. So... You got 1.5 wrong.
And to be fair, and that was the question about a team that wasn't Liverpool. That was who'd won the year before. Who cares about the 2004 Champions League campaign?
Yeah, that isn't from your chosen subject. So that's okay to get wrong.
Do you know what happened was with that? I pictured in my head 2004. I went, oh, Mourinho won it, and I panicked and went Chelsea. But of course, it was Porto.
Oh, you were on the right line.
It was running down the touchline at Man U and all that, wasn't it?
I mean, I think it was Porto. We're probably going to get people writing and going, "What are you talking about?"
If we get people writing in, that means people are listening. So I will happily accept that.
We'll take it. You know, you're going in with low expectations. If we get complaints, it means we're doing good.
Criticism. I'll take that. So I made that 9. Was that 9 or 10? I'm not sure.
That's going to take some beating, lads.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, either way, that puts you top of the leaderboard for this week.
So, and bottom.
And bottom. And comfortably mid-table.
So it's nine. It's ten if you accept Leverkusen as the second answer.
I think we should do. Yeah, I think VAR should always err on the side of the attacker.
Nine so, and a half.
Yeah. And I would say, in my defence, I cost myself valuable seconds by having to correct myself. So I suffered enough. Yeah.
Indeed. Indeed.
I had so many more questions. It's interesting to know.
Possible extra point. Possible extra point for the Andy Gray impression. Thought it was quite good there as well.
Yeah.
We should maybe put this in every time, so someone has to do some kind of impression.
That's a good idea. We're working it out. We're working out this podcast as we go.
I'm so glad that you left the production meeting until the podcast. It's an honour to be here to witness this production.
We won't put this one out.
Nah.
This is like when Arsenal play Barnet before the season. It's just a little loose now.
Just good to feel the ball on your foot early in the season. Isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Like a Europa League pre early round. Yeah. That was very impressive, though, because those questions were like a 3D porn film. They were just coming right at you.
Yeah.
And you were really quick off the mark.
Dave, we've lost Vegard of that comment. I think he's out.
Sorry.
Vegard's
mum.
Yeah, Vegard's mum is she's a woman of Christ, actually. She's she won't be having that.
Toby, thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of Who's Your Team. It's been brilliant to chat to you and just great to catch up as well.
I've really enjoyed it, chaps. Thank you very much. An honour to be your first. And I think you've chosen a niche topic because there's not many football podcasts out there. So well done on finding you.
That's the main thing. You just got to find your niche.
You've cornered a small part of the market.
It might catch on. I think it's going to catch on.
Yeah, and the
best thing, of course, is it's a different team every week, so no one will listen more than once. So.
That's so true. So true. And until next time, Jim, try and keep it in your pants, you bloody shagger.
All right, yeah, bye. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, Toby. Yeah, go on, see you. Oh, thank God he's gone.
Makes a terrible cup of tea.
Toby Tarrant, ladies and gentlemen, what a great start to the podcast. I have to say that I've got to call him out on this. He's a piece of shit because he's a Liverpool fan. He's a nice guy, but he called out Solskjaer for not being good at a time when he'd just beaten like Paris Saint-Germain at the time of recording. They were really on the up, and him calling him out on it, that was the start of his downfall, and the Man United banter years could well be over now.
Very true. Although I like the fact that that was the start of the downfall and we hadn't put the episode out yet. So I don't know how that Solskjaer found that out. Maybe was he tapping our Zoom call or something? But yeah, Toby is one of those annoying guys who is incredibly nice, unbelievably good at his job, annoyingly quite good looking, and knows his football inside out.
He does.
He's a quadruple threat. And I just feel like that is unfair on the rest of us.
It is a bit out of order, actually. I think maybe we should take a toe off him or something. But yeah,
then
nice
just be,
guy.
Then he'd just be B Tarrant.
Yeah. Toy Tarrant.
So since we recorded this episode, obviously over a year ago, Toby has also started his own podcast, clearly inspired by us. It's called Zero Ducks Given. He does with Stephen Finn and Daniel Norcross. It is a cricket podcast. Now, am I a cricket fan? No. Do I understand cricket? Absolutely not. But did I find it entertaining? Yes, indeed, which I think is probably the best review Toby will get. So do go check out Zero Ducks Given. It's also on Audio Boom, like this podcast. So do go check out Toby's new pod.
So what made... So Michael Owen is what really attracted him to Liverpool, because he's a guy whose dad was a Reading fan. And Michael Owen. That just made me realise, again, we're just complimenting him, but he's actually younger than you think as well.
He's really annoying. Because he's quite tall. I think you think he's sort of maybe older than he is.
And he is quite mature, I think, as well. But yeah, Michael Owen. Because I sort of think, well, Toby and Michael Owen can't be that far apart in age, but enough to be his childhood hero.
Yeah, Michael Owen, I would say since he stopped playing football, Michael Owen has gone down a very different route.
Yeah.
I'd actually say their careers are going in different directions, actually. Toby's is going up, and Michael Owen is messaging models on Twitter. Yeah. So they're very different trajectories.
But you've got your sort of vintage shirts, and people, like an Arsenal fan could have a new Arsenal shirt or an old Arsenal shirt that has Bergkamp on the back. You think, yeah, great. And Michael Owen won trophies at Liverpool. He was a legend, but he left just before that Istanbul Rafa season. He left to join Real Madrid, and then he eventually ends up at Man United. So
he's a Liverpool legend, but if you turn up at Anfield with an old shirt that has Owen on the back, you're like, oi, you mank.
But also, Michael Owen's one of those players. Like, again, if you look at Bergkamp, in my head, Bergkamp is always about 31, and he's always got that slight receding sort of blonde bit of the front. Michael Owen is always 18.
Yeah.
In my head, he just will because of the way he burst onto the scene, even though he is now, I guess, in his 40s.
Yeah, and he also never really changed his game. He just got less good.
Yeah, so his hamstrings stopped working.
A really fast little 18-year-old. And then once he got to 23, he wasn't fast enough. It was just still sort of Michael Owen, really.
Yeah. Just a slower version of Michael
Owen. Less effective. But yeah.
Well, thank you to Toby for kicking off this series, series one of Who's Your Team. If you've enjoyed this episode, Dave, we have a Twitter account. Yeah. We have an Instagram account. We currently have one follower on Twitter, and we have 10 followers on Instagram. I don't know how we've done that. We're following no one, and we've posted nothing.
I don't follow them.
No, you found out literally today that we've got them. I'm going to read them out. The Twitter handle is twitter.com/whosyourteampod, and then it's the same for Instagram, instagram.com/whosyourteampod. What should we put up there? Should we put up little clips from the episodes? Yeah. Shall we slag off Michael Owen? What would you like us to do on there?
I think we should be putting up little sneak peeks, sort of clues of what's to come. So we'll do a sketch of Michael Owen stabbing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for this one, and then the episode drops and it'll make total sense.
Yeah. Well, Dave, thank you very much for kicking off this series.
We're in.
We're in.
Off.
How do you feel? First five? Solid first five, I think.
Well, a decent first five. You know, you've got to carry on from here. You just take each game as it comes, I think.
Indeed. So we'll be back, I want to say next week. Yeah. With another episode.
I imagine you're all listening back many years from now after we've picked up our 10th podcast award going, look at where it all started. But
exactly.
If you're coming on early doors, welcome.
They're looking at this 10 AB after Boris, thinking, in this wasteland of a country, at least we have this podcast.
Exactly. And
I
appreciate
it. So join us again next week for another celebrity talking about their favourite football team on Who's Your Team, hosted by Audio Boom. And our theme tune is done by Oz Brinkhurst.
Yep, and make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you can get those episodes as soon as they're released.
So until next time, Dave.
Good night.